I took it with a quick slice of the scissors. I was left, holding my open palm in my hands, wondering why I didn't go back to my faithful old rock. I could have shattered his scissors to smithereens, and I would have too. I should have too. But it never happened. Ty retreated gleefully to the private bedroom, slamming the door shut hard, sealing my mind-boggling loss with a brain-piercing bang. And so it was. Of course I couldn't sleep that night, and it wasn't just because of the metal prongs stabbing my kidneys. It was because of the way I went down. But I can't blame the game. No. Rock, paper, scissors was there, settling an undebatable debate. It answered our big question, shutting the lid, closing the door, sealing the deal. You can't argue with rock, paper, scissors. When it's over, it's really over. Sure, you can beg for that extension, but the victor never needs to take your bait. They played by the rules, and they won. Rock, paper, scissors helps you decide between pepperoni or sausage, the freeway or the back roads, the drive home or the sleep home. It answers the little daily decisions that freeze us up. Who showers first? Who's paying for pizza? Who gets to change the baby's diaper? These are all tough questions, and they are all easily settled with a quick game of rock, paper, scissors. But if you do enter the arena, then take my advice. Just go for 2 out of 3. Awesome.
Pushing those little buttons on the soft drink cup lid. Cola, diet, RB, or other. When we were kids, my sister and I carefully pushed those little plastic buttons every time we scored a meal at McDonald's. We pushed cola if we had cola, RB if we had root beer, and other if we were sucking back some McDonald's orange drink, which was our usual. Honestly, we thought there was a big garbage survey at the end of the day, and every customer had to punch their button to send in feedback. We figured some poor sap stuck his arm shoulder deep in that bag of lettuce scraps drenched in Big Mac sauce, hollow ice cream cone bottoms, and greasy French fry containers, and pulled out all the cup lids. We imagined he arranged them in tipsy, drippy piles, and counted how many sold that day, adding the results up on a clipboard and calling them into the head office so they knew how many batches to make for tomorrow. Kids, huh? These days, every time I enjoy a fine dine at a fast food joint, I make sure I still take lots of napkins, swivel in my chair, and press those little buttons on the drink cup lid. There's just something about the way they give, the way they turn white, the way they're permanently transformed for all eternity that just makes me itch for it. It's just compulsive. It's just instinct. It's just awesome.
Your colon. Have you ever run the last leg of the relay? If you have, then you know it's a stressful experience, because you either make it or break it. I mean, you're either ahead and it's up to you to hold the lead, or you're behind and it's up to you to catch up. Everyone else is done, so they stand behind you relaxing and catching their breath, while you give everything you've got to sprint for the finish. And of course, because you're last, you're dealing with a sweaty baton, a trampled path, and cold muscles. It's not easy. Well, guess who's running the last leg of the relay in your body? Guess who's anchoring the team? Guess who's picking up the slack? Guess who's taking the baton for the final leg of the race? Dude, it's your colon. Or Cole, for short. Now, Cole's a humble guy. I mean, call him colon, call him large intestine, call him big snakey, call him whatever you want. He doesn't care. He just shows up to work. All 5 feet of him, day after day, week after week, year after year. He punches his time clock and starts working in the dark, tight recesses of your abdomen from the day you're born, twisting himself up into all kinds of positions, kicking it into high gear from the get-go. Now, coal does a lot of work. One, he stores and dumps waste. This isn't a pleasant job, but someone's got to do it. This man is the garbage man and the trash can. Think about that. He doesn't get one of the nicer jobs, like looking at your food or tasting your food. No, he just stores and dumps it after everybody else has had their way with it. I mean, they've done such a number on it that it's no longer food. It's called chyme, a partially digested semi-fluid mass that probably smells like what would come out of a dog if you fed it raw pork, chicken curry, and bleach. Thankfully, Cole's a real professional. Two, he gathers water from the waste. I know what you're thinking. Don't my esophagus, stomach, and small intestine already do this? And actually, you're right, that is true. But Cole picks up where they left off. Yes, he smiles backward at the gang, flashes them a big thumbs up, and then quietly finishes the job when they aren't looking. What a team player. Three, he absorbs vitamins. What, you thought he was just a chyme bag? Just a water sucker upper? Nah, man. He's also rooting around for vitamins, too. He's the guy at the dump with an eye on your discarded clothes and furniture, aiming to spot those hidden gems that are useful somewhere else. You know all this talk about reducing, reusing, and recycling? Cole's been doing that for thousands of years. He practically invented it. Now, Cole the Colon is a huge player in your body, but you never know that from talking to him. If you try, he'll ignore you, and you'll just hear the deep, quiet sound of chyme processing. And that's sort of the point. He's always there, always grinding, always working the gears, always helping the younger guys along, and, most important, always getting the job done. And just try getting him to take a vacation. So this one's for Cole. Pat yourself on the belly today, and thank your Colon for being a true servant leader, a humble team player, and a bona fide nice guy. Awesome.
The day you first realize you can drive. When I was 16, the local driver's ed course was offered on a muggy, unbearably humid week in the dead of summer. The classroom was on the top floor of an old downtown building, housing a mixed bag of dentists, lawyers, and travel agencies with faded posters in the windows. The room had no air conditioning, just windows propped open with rulers, pleading with Ma Nature for some heavenly breeze to keep us awake. We panted and dripped, and it reeked like a pack of chalk, crumbled like saltines in a big soup bowl of sweat. I don't know about you, but for me, driver's ed classes were torture. Learning how to drive in a classroom is like learning to ride a bike in a swimming pool. It just makes no sense. Overheads were thrown up on screen, with the instructor drawing triangles to show us our blind spots. We would discuss the history of seatbelts and watch gory videos to scare us straight. It's fair to say, most of driver's ed class is pretty foggy to me. My notes are long gone, and there's no way I could draw you a picture of my blind spot. But there is one thing that I do remember from those classes. One bit of one lecture on one afternoon that stuck in my head. It was when the instructor said that every driver goes through four steps on their way to learning how to drive. Rapping his chalk on the blackboard to get our attention, he continued, "It's just a matter of knowing what step you're in." Step one. You don't know you don't know. You've never tried to drive a car before, so you have no idea you suck at it. All you know is that there are cars everywhere and people driving them. So what's so hard about that? Step two. You know you don't know. Surprise! You can't drive. You realize this the first time you make a painfully slow and wide turn into the wrong lane. It hits home when you tire punch the curb and accidentally run a red light. You can't park, can't parallel park, can't park on a hill, and forget to signal. It's depressing, but at least now you know you don't know. You made it to step two, whether you wanted to or not. Step three. You know you know. After a while, it finally comes. The blissful day when you realize for the first time you can drive. Step 3 usually arrives after scaring a few pedestrians, enduring some frustrating coaching sessions with your parents, and listening to lots of, uh-oh, you're on the road, jokes. But you finally made it. And now you're higher than a kite, sitting pretty on cloud 10. Congratulations. Step 4. You don't know you know. Eventually, it becomes old hat. You're on step 4 the first time you arrive at work, instead of the grocery store, on Saturday morning, or land in your driveway in a sudden panic, because you can't remember the last 15 minutes of your commute. How did I get here? You ask yourself, before realizing you must have driven home in a waking dream, signaling subconsciously and turning effortlessly, your brain clicking over to autopilot without letting you know. When this happens, you don't even know you know anymore. But this isn't about step 4. It's about step 3. It's about the great joy of realizing you've learned something new, something massively new, and can feel proud that your effort, practice, and determination has finally paid off. That first day you first realize you can drive is a wicked high. And isn't it a great sense of freedom when the road hockey rinks and street chalkboards of your childhood transform into highways to drive-ins and out-of-town parties? The world seems to suddenly shrink and open up. It's cool thinking how many cities and places connect to the street you live on and all the places you'll eventually go. Awesome.
Crap job shoes. My shoes go through a very specific shoe life cycle. 1. Papa's got a brand new shoe. Wrapped in tissue paper, wedged in a cardboard box, baby shoes come home from the factory and begin their new life in the closet. Even though you know they're around, you might not be ready to give up your regular pair. So there's a chance they could sit for a bit. That's okay. They're getting used to their new home. 2. Baby steps. Eventually, they take the first step. It's a bit awkward and they hug your foot a lot differently than your old pair. But they are excited, shining brightly, glowing whitely. They blind the world with their sparkling laces and reflective sheen. 3. Adolescence. Hey, every shoe is going to get a bit curious and test the limits. It's in their nature. These teenage years are when they step in their first puddle, get dripped on by their first ketchup squirt, and go out really late to an outdoor concert in a muddy field. They get a bit messed up, and maybe you worry about them, but they'll be all right. They had to grow up someday. Some say this is when they first get to know their shoes on a really deep level. 4. The workhorse years. Now they're number 1 in your rotation. They're providers of the entire shoe family, putting time on your feet for the pairs of sandals, dress shoes, and gym shoes littering your closet. 5. Retirement. Eventually, they hit the golden years, scuffed beyond repair with broken laces and smooth, worn-down soles. They're put in a home at the back of the closet behind old tennis rackets and a pair of rusty skates. Although they're gone, you and I both know they're always there when you need them most. Mowing a damp lawn, painting a messy bathroom, building a deck in the backyard. They come out and serve as your crap job shoes, dedicating the remainder of their long, proud lives to service. Paint splotches, dead leaves, and caked-on mud coat their tired, worn-out bodies at the end of your long life together. Never, ever forget. Awesome.
Celebrating your pet's birthday, even though they have no idea what's going on. All they know is everybody snapping photos of them in a party hat, and there's a slice of cake in the food dish. Awesome.
waking up and realizing it's Saturday.
Crap! What time is it? I gotta get to work!
Wait a minute. Awesome.
High tens. High fives are good. High tens are great. Picture it. Jaw dropping in slow motion silence. Eyebrows furrowing in mock angry rage. Head slowly wagging side to side and both hands lifting high up top and waiting a brief moment for your friend to answer your call and deliver a booming double palm-on-palm smack. Now that's a beautiful picture. That's the happy dial turned to 10. That's a good day giving birth to a great one. That's a photo from Appendix A of The Study of the Best Things Ever. Lady, I don't know who you are, where you live, or what you're all about, but I know you gotta love that beautifully loud high 10 and its satisfying 20-finger crack. It's just explosive. Like I said, the high five is good too, especially if a baby lays one on you. But really, almost anyone can deliver a high five. It's just one hand. Once you start tenning, the five starts to look wrong, incomplete, and unfinished. It becomes a half, a partial, a sort of. It's like a flop with no flip, yang with no yin, pong with no ping, or a unicycle. But the high ten? Sugar, let's talk about that high ten. Now that's the celebratory hand-on-hand gesture for you and me. See, the high ten takes guts for two big reasons. One, first off, higher chance of looking stupid. You throw a high five up there and no one answers it, no problem. You just put your hand nonchalantly back in your pocket, scratch your head, or swipe it through the side of your hair, grease monkey style. No one notices you covered it up and all is well. But you throw a high ten up there and you get left hanging? Well, now you just look foolish. Like you're trying to get the wave started at your kid's t-ball game or airing out your pits at the backyard frat party. Two. Also, there's more coordination required. Think about it. During a high five, all eyes are on that one hand. With four eyes focused on one slap, there's not too much that can go wrong. Yes, there's the awkward pinky-on-pinky slap, but those don't happen too often. Now, the high ten's a different animal. This time, each person has to focus on two slaps. Time them right. Aim them precisely. Smack them hard. You can't just high ten perfectly the first time. It is very difficult and requires a great deal of training. However, the good news is that once you work up the nerve to pull off the high ten, it can be a very rewarding slap. So give it a shot. Test it out. See what it's all about. And hey, maybe even try laying a thundering double palm-on-palm smack on one of your closest friends today. Then maybe go out for beers or something. Wings, too, if no one's eaten. Awesome.
Seeing somebody laugh in their sleep. It's late. It's dark. It's quiet. You're tossing and turning, wrapped tightly in a mummy's tomb of crumpled sheets, while your bed buddy blissfully slumbers on. Maybe you try lying in absolute perfect silence, flipping the pillow, or taking deep breaths timed to subconscious Sam snoring beside you. You might be frustrated. You might be tired. You might be ready to pack it in and scream. But sometimes, once in a while, it's at these perfect moments when the person next to you starts laughing in their sleep. And what a bizarre and hilarious sight that is, because it's like, what's so funny? I mean, sure, we're used to laughing at things we see in our waking life. Your roommate drops a hammer on her toe, your brother gets squared by a tennis ball, sure. We get those things, but when somebody's laughing in their sleep, it's a different kind of funny because it's the most inside of inside jokes. You aren't in on it, and frankly, they aren't either. So whether it's the baby in the crib, your dad in the tent, or your girlfriend wedged beside you on the futon, there's something hilarious when you see them laugh in their sleep and try to imagine what's running through their head. Awesome. Wait, hold on. Last question. Do you ever try to influence their dreams by whispering little things in their ear and stuff? Me neither. Awesome.
When there's ice cream left at the bottom of the cone. My friend Allison was obsessed with the last taste. Sitting on the deck during a cookout over at a friend's for a potluck, it didn't matter. No meal should end with anything less than the best taste possible, she'd say, while devouring the pink and juicy inner cube of steak she'd saved on the edge of her plate during the entire meal. It's just not worth the risk. I admit that at first I found it odd, but over time began to admire her strong-willed ability to resist further nibbling. Me, I typically capped off a rich slice of cheesecake with a bite of a cold, tough dinner roll from an hour ago without even thinking about it. But not Allison. No, she didn't mask the last bite of a cold-cut sub by picking at the stray ribbons of mustard-smeared lettuce lying on the tray. She didn't chase the sticky brownie paste stuck in her molars with a glass of watery skim milk. And if we were dining out in style, she wouldn't taste-test a bite of my dinner after she finished her own. There's no way that could be better than my ravioli was, she'd say, shrugging. I want to keep tasting ravioli. So keep tasting ravioli she did. Because that's what last tasters do, people. They find a taste they like and they stick with it. Now, we both know Allison isn't the only one. Stop for a second and look at yourself. Just look at yourself. What are you, lying in bed, sitting on a plane, reading on the beach? And are you nodding along? There are plenty of you, even if you don't wear buttons or meet in chat rooms. Basically, if you make sure there's always a perfect crust of toast left for that last smear of egg yolk, you're one of them. But don't worry, because it's a good thing. See, that kind of eat planning is something worth respecting and something worth believing in. You come, you chomp, you go home happy, your mouth slowly savoring those final fleeting fumes of deliciosity after the meal is done. Nothing wrong with that. But sadly, even for those in the biz, it's not all sugar and sunshine out there. No, some foods trip up the best of last tasters. Plain nachos at the bottom of cheesy salsa towers, dry crusts at the end of the sandwich, and perhaps most dreaded of all, the hollow cardboard bite at the bottom of the ice cream cone. Oh, I know the ice cream looks innocent at first, and when you start eating, everything is smooth sailing. That napkin-clad cone lands in your hand and you give a few light licks, not wanting an overly aggressive tongue to topple the tower onto the sidewalk. Then your scoop settles into the cone's lippy grooves, and you get a bit more pushy. Broad, sweeping swirls do laps, and sometimes you even punch in with a big bite or a lip-smearing kiss. If it's dripping, there's no time for small talk because you're spinning the cone like a corn cob. Sitting on a picnic table by the dorms, watching the sun dip down at the cottage, camping in the backyard with the grandkids, you lose your sense of time and just keep licking, 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 licking. Frozen nirvana makes you woozy and lowers your defenses until you're almost done. And that's when it hits you like a hammer. Brother, you're not gonna make it. Shocked, you stare down at the cone in your hand and notice it's feeling a bit light. There's more ice cream in there, but not much. And you have a funny feeling those last few bites of cone are going to be hollow and tasteless if you don't do something about it. So you weigh your choices. Option one, the vacuum. With time running out, some people cut their losses and form a perfect O with their mouth and speed suck the remaining creamy plunder from the cone. This way you end up with a solid 100% ice cream finish and ditch the cone in the trash. Option 2. The pusher. Here your tongue gets in the game and pushes the ice cream down and down deeper into the cone. You're not giving up. You're not sacrificing. You're just making sure you end up with a great final taste. The earlier you perform the pusher, the better for everybody involved. Now, it's a tough choice, but I recommend you go for the pusher. Don't give up. The benefits are really worth it. I mean, it's a great last taste when you're holding that tiny little goblet of bubbly, melted ice cream and can toss it back for a tasty, cool, and creamery finish. Instead of having empty and brittle cardboard fouling up your mouth, you score a soft and sweet, sugary delight. People of the world, let's face it. When you ace this move, you become the true Dairy Queen. Awesome!
Sweatpants. Old faithful sweatpants. So comfortable, yet so risky for wearing out of the house. Seriously, how many of you pull off the sweatpant look at the movies or grocery store? I bet not too many, despite the fact that sweatpants are God's gift to legs. They're just so practical. No need for a belt. You just toss them on, and you're good to go. Just think, if we all switched to sweatpants, we'd render the belt obsolete. No more belts. Gone. Just like that, forever replaced by a superior technology, the elastic waistband. Easy to turn into shorts. You roll them up and you're good. That's right, instant shorts. Now that's flexibility. A side benefit is that they don't look terrible, unlike rolled up dress pants or rolled up tight white jeans. Stretchiness. Have you ever heard someone say, "I lost 30 pounds. I had to buy all new clothes." Me too. And have you ever heard someone say, "There was a sale on Ben and Jerry's last week, and now none of my clothes fit me"? Me neither. But you know that's going on too. The point is that most clothes aren't stretchy. So if the size of you changes, so does the size of your clothes, which generally means going out to buy more. But guess what? You don't need to buy new sweatpants. They're the caring, understanding, stretchy friend in your closet. They'll wrap themselves around you comfortably no matter what size you are. Thanks, sweat pal. Warmth. Hey, when you're walking around in your beltless shorts, it's easy to overlook one of the key features. That's right, folks. I'm talking about warmth. I mean, there's a reason they're not called shiver pants. Relatively cheap. What's up with the price of pants? You'd think we were buying limited edition bald eagle head encrusted cashmere infused Kobe leather trousers judging by the price of these things. I mean, they're pants. Let's keep them affordable. That's why it's all about sweatpants. A side benefit is that they rarely change color or style, so you can use them for years to come without worry. Remember, when it comes to sweatpants, gray is the new gray. So let's sit back and smile a slow smile, nod a slow nod, and clap a slow clap. Let's raise our drinks, then clink them, then drink them. Yes, let's give cheers to sweatpants. Let's say thank you, sweatpants, for everything you do on behalf of the world's hot, comfortable legs. Awesome.
Multitasking while brushing your teeth. Hey, there's a lot to get done around here. Oh, what? You thought those magazines on top of the toilet were going to organize themselves? Sure, sure. And I suppose the shower curtain will magically get pulled out and straightened by the same invisible bathroom butler too, right? No, but seriously though, isn't it all about maximizing time while you're scraping away at your pearly yellows? I mean, you master the basic motions after the first few hundred practices, and then it's like, hey, 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 couple minutes of free time every night during the big brush. If this sounds like you, then congratulations. You may be a toothpaste stroller. Toothpaste strollers don't worry. because they know their molars aren't going anywhere. So they check email, set the alarm clock, or put on pajama bottoms while brushing away. Now, if you're like me, whatever you do while brushing your teeth ends up taking much longer than normal. But that's part of the fun. I mean, say you're taking off your socks with one hand while brushing with the other. Well, that's like 2 minutes of awkward hopping and peeling while your brushing loses focus and maybe slips out of your mouth a few times. You end up grabbing the counter before you slip, a half-peeled sock on your foot and foamy streaks on your chin, and you just have to laugh. Because you'll get it eventually. When you do, you'll be an official member of the Toothpaste Stroller Society, TSS. Fellow members, you know what I'm talking about. You know that multitasking while brushing scratches a small part of your brain the right way. Now, instead of daydreaming or examining your wrinkles in the mirror, you can feel satisfied that as you spit that bubbly foam puddle into the sink, the dog-eared pile of magazines are just as organized and ready for bed as you are. Awesome.
The parking lot pull-through. Backing out of parking spots is no fun. Turning side to side, checking mirrors, reversing real slowly, you're sizing up how far away your car is from another one. It's an awkward 3, 4, 5-point turn as you twist your spine up, scrape your tires up, dent a fender up, and barely avoid nailing a grocery cart up. It's a risky, twisty game of lot danger. So, take no chances and go for that beautiful parking lot pull-through. A classic parking move that lets you drive right in and drive right out. The trick to pulling it off is finding a double empty parking spot, entering it, and then driving up into the second spot. And it's great, because you get 2 smirky, satisfied smiles for the price of 1. When you nail that PLPT, you're loving it. When you return to your car and drive out, you're loving it again. For those of you keeping track at home, that's 2 awesomes for the price of 1. Awesome! Awesome!
The 3-paycheck month. Butcher, baker, candlestick maker. No matter what, if you're working for the man, there's a chance you're getting paid every 2 weeks. Maybe every other Thursday or every other Friday. Maybe dollars dropped into bank accounts or fistfuls of sweaty change dropped into open palms. All I know is, if you're on this schedule, you're loving the couple months a year when you score 3 paychecks instead of 2. Nobody knows why or how this happens, but let's hold hands today and agree not to question it. On that 3rd payday, raise your eyebrows, glance left very slowly, glance right very slowly, nod slightly, and carry about your business. If you're chiseling away at a mortgage, throwing in for car payments, or dropping coin on a fat phone bill, then you know the bliss that comes with having a tiny bit of extra cash above your monthly debts. So go ahead. Supersize that combo. Fill up with high-octane gasoline, or tuck it under your couch cushions for a rainy day. Awesome!
The smell of books. When I was a little kid, my mom read to me before bed. Actually, I suppose read with me would be more accurate. See, we had a deal. She read the left page, and I struggled to slowly read the right, moving my finger over the words, letting her help me pronounce the big ones. Over time, we worked our way through many old collections from garage sales, bookstores, and libraries near our house. We learned about the lives of Mr. Men, Curious George, and the Berenstain Bears. Sometimes, we went to the bookstore on Saturday mornings for a treat. I always loved walking on those creaky wooden floors, loitering at the big magazine rack, and chatting with the friendly staff covered in glasses, beards, and thick wool sweaters. I would sniff up that heady bookstore air full of fresh paper, cardboard boxes, binding glue, and lingering coffee fumes. The smell of books reminds me of late nights cramming for biology exams between the library stacks at college. It reminds me of lying on my elbows on a warm beach towel by the ocean on summer vacation. It reminds me of the heavy set of encyclopedias in my living room when I was a kid, the ones I relied on to write last-minute reports on the praying mantis, Nigeria, or the 1972 Summer Olympics. The smell of books reminds me of learning to read and learning to explore the world. I love walking quietly through bookstores and thinking of how many stories lie hidden in the pages right beside us. Entire lives have been poured into mapping the earth and conducting experiments, crafting mysteries, and teaching languages, showing us how to cook and garden, and sending us on faraway trips to faraway worlds. The smell of books is the smell of us all coming together to document, entertain, and explain things for ourselves now and forever. It's a big sniff of humanity, a big sniff of wisdom, and a great big sniff of awesome.
Getting in line before it gets really long. Lineups are everywhere. There are short ones, fast ones, straight ones, and curly ones. Can you stomach the top five killers? If not, look away. Look away. 5. Airport security. Plastic bins, loafers, keychains, and laptops fly in all directions in the maddening chaos of the airport security lineup. Grannies get the beep down and guards tear through purses looking for terrorism, while folks jostle about awkwardly, emptying and refilling pockets, a sweaty feet smell hovering over everything. 4. The bank at lunchtime on Friday. Even if you only want the machine, chances are good you'll get stuck behind someone making 4 deposits. 3. Wherever you get your driver's license renewed. Throw mugshot photos and a few eye exams in the mix, and that lineup just wraps around and around and around all day. 2. The bathrooms right after a movie lets out. How bad is it when the line reaches right up to the inside of the bathroom door but no farther? Then you're the one opening that door to find a clump of fidgety folks wedged tightly in that bathroom lobby with their arms crossed and their faces scrunched up. It's a sardine tin of heavy bladders and dark clouds. Not a great scene. 1. Post-Christmas returns line. This is the worst of all. Honestly, you may as well keep that ice cream maker and novelty wine bottle opener at this point. Give up, go home, and drown your sorrows in a bottle of Shiraz and a bowl of warm, runny orange sherbet. So yeah, there are some terrible lines out there. Sometimes you beat them, sometimes they beat you. But one thing's for sure. It's great when you enter a classically long and winding line just before it gets long and winding. Yes, when you're first through the maze of velvet ropes, when you beat the lunch rush at the sandwich place, when you score the employee who just came off break at the DMV. Well, doesn't it feel like you bucked the system? You can hardly believe your luck as you look back at the poor souls waiting. Smiling sadly, you shake your head, because you know you'll be there again one day. But this time, you won the game. You're riding high, and you're feeling so completely awesome.
Getting into a bed with clean sheets after shaving your legs. Stubble-free legs and cool, clean sheets combine to form a silky, smooth ride into dreamland. Or so I've heard. Awesome.
The gas arrow. Put your hand up if you've ever driven your car up to a gas pump only to notice after you've parked that your gas cap is on the other side? My brother, if your hand is up right now, you are not alone. See, some cars I've driven have the old gas hole on the starboard side and some on port. Due to my unfortunate affliction with gas hole no rememberitis, I'm always parking the car the wrong way. Sure, I try desperately to notice the little gas cap bulge in the side mirror when I pull up, craning my head wildly in both directions, and generally pretty sure I caught a quick glimpse of it as I pull in. But then I get out, notice I messed up, pound my fist on the trunk, and pull an awkward 7-point turn before anyone moves in to steal my spot. It is a terrible thing. But guess what? High tens around the room because there is hope for people like us. Shockingly, I have recently discovered the gas arrow. Yes, believe it, driving fans, because it truly exists. The gas arrow is a tiny little arrow right beside the picture of the gas pump, which tells you which side your car's gas hole is on. I know! It's crazy! And I guess whoever is responsible for marketing really dropped the ball on this one, because nobody I asked, N equals 3, has even noticed this before. Yes, just look at that gas arrow. Head nodding casually to the left or the right. A classy pal trying to tip you off real subtle-like. It's a flashlight in a storage closet or a lighthouse on a foggy pier. The great noble gas arrow telling you which way to park your stupid car. So thanks for the big helper gas arrow. Until car companies start putting gas holes on both sides or they invent a new wireless gas that lets you fill up through the radio, I think I can speak for all of humanity when I say that we love you and everything you stand for. Awesome.
Snow falling on Christmas Eve. Jumbo snowflakes falling thick and heavy on Christmas Eve are a special sight. They blur the world for a moment and lay a fresh blank canvas over everything. So if you're sitting inside listening to carols on the radio, sneaking extra cookies from the kitchen, or wearing a bright red sweater and chatting with family, take a moment to look out the window and just enjoy the scene. Awesome.
Playing with a baby and not having to change its diaper. Save your money. Babies aren't interested in talking dolls, board games, or baseball. They just want to play peekaboo, patty cake, ripping up wrapping paper, breaking your glasses, or sticking their hands in stuff. And playing with babies is great fun. You don't need to hunt for batteries, find a set of dice, or put your shoes on. You just make faces, do baby talk voices, and fly your hand around like an airplane. They laugh and giggle, and suddenly you're a world-class entertainer. It's great. Until, of course, it's that time of the afternoon. You know what I'm talking about. Mommy or daddy pops in, picks up the baby, does the classic reverse-angled diaper peek move, and finds a chocolate factory working overtime back there. When they say, "Looks like somebody needs a changing," that's your cue to slink off silently to the kitchen. The party's on pause during your daring dirty diaper dash, but it's back on 10 minutes later when you casually show up and ask, "Hey, can I play with the baby again?" Awesome.
Squeezing a little more juice out of dying batteries. It happens when you least expect it. As you lie on the couch late at night flipping between talk shows and sports highlights, the volume button suddenly stops working. So you push it really, really hard until it eventually zaps into gear. But you have to face it. Those remote control batteries are dying. You know it, and I know it. And there are only 5 possible junk science moves you've got to squeeze out some more juice. Here they are, in order of complexity. 1. The wait. This is what amateurs do. It's called waiting a while and then hitting volume again a minute later. If this is your only move, then you've got a lot to learn. 2. Flip-flop till they drop. This is a simple and extremely ineffective move. Crack open the back of the remote and switch spots between batteries. Give it a shot, but nobody's promising anything. 3. Aye, there's the rub. Some people swear that popping the batteries out and rubbing them together charges them up. It has to do with ions, my brother-in-law D once said with a straight face. Better hope so, or you're trying the next move. 4. Shake it like a Polaroid picture. My old high school computer teacher taught us that shaking batteries helps move the battery acid around and gets them working again. I didn't say he was a good teacher. You risk looking foolish. So best not to try this at birthday parties or in front of an audience. 5. The Robin Hood. Let's say the batteries are dying in your digital camera and your DVD player remote takes the same size. You hardly touch the remote, so they're practically full. Donating them to the digital camera and bringing the camera's barely alive organs back to the remote is like robbing from the rich and giving to the poor. If it works, you're laughing. Hey, listen, if you've ever scored big with any of these, then I'm right there with you. Frankly, we all try them because here's the dirty secret about batteries. No one knows how they work. Honestly, could you put one together? Do you know what's in there? I've got no clue. If I had to guess, I'd say battery acid is harvested from the bark of a rare species of tree in a tiny distant island country where it's the number one export. Though their struggling economy is barely afloat. Wealthy battery acid tycoons sip expensive champagne in living rooms full of remote control cars, talking dolls, and cordless radios. Whatever they are, wherever they come from, when you squeeze a bit more juice from a set of dying batteries, it's like you're suddenly Dr. Frankenstein. Rise, you scream at your remote. Rise, rise, rise! Lightning flashes in the windows, and thunder crashes in the distance as the volume bar appears on screen and slowly starts moving up. Awesome.
Falling asleep in the back seat of a car late at night on the drive home. Moonlit skies, stained plush seats, and a quietly revving engine combine to form a perfectly cozy late-night bed on the long drive home. Whether you're a baby in a car seat, a teen getting a lift from the party, or grandma cabbing home from bingo, there's nothing like drifting into dreamland in that rusty Volvo on the slow and swervy country back roads. Yes, those tires rumble over empty lanes as headlights pop over hilltops, warm your eyelids and whoosh past, leaving the entire cab pitch black except for the faint glow of the distant dashboard clock. And if you're little, and you're lucky, you might score valet service, which includes wearing pajamas under your winter coat, and getting carried up to your bed after you get home. It feels so good, you might even pretend to be asleep, just to pull it off. Awesome.
Ordering off the menu at fast food restaurants. Ever had a Neapolitan shake from McDonald's? One where they layer the chocolate, strawberry, and vanilla flavors in the same cup, creating a thick, icy, slow-moving, light brown swirls with pink flecks taste sensation. Yeah, my friend Chad was a regular customer of those. Of course, when he was working at McDonald's, he got sick of the regular menu pretty quickly and started tinkering in the back like a mad scientist with his coworkers, developing exotic, unstable, and unpredictable meal creations with the ingredients on hand. There were failed attempts, like the Chicken McNugget Flurry, but sometimes they struck gold and created a new off-the-menu line extension. Now, my world opened up when I first realized with Chad that you could order off the menu at fast food restaurants. Since then, I've learned about other secret options around, like for instance, Wendy's, the Grand Slam. If the single, double, or triple hamburgers at Wendy's just don't cut it for you, go all out and order the massive four-patty Grand Slam, also known as the classic quadruple or meat cube. Wendy's, the Barnyard. Are you ready for this? Loaded with a beef patty, spicy chicken breast, bacon strips, and a slice of cheese between each layer, this one's perfect for frat hazings. Starbucks, the short cup. Even though the smallest size on the Starbucks menu is a tall, they do offer a secret short size behind the counter. Perfect for that between coffee breaks coffee. Starbucks, the red eye. A cup of coffee with a shot of espresso dumped in. Now, I'm not a huge coffee drinker, but apparently you can even upgrade this to 2 shots, which is called a black eye. I presume upgrading to 3 shots is called a jumpy unblinking eye. Subway, the quesadilla. Late at night, the staff might whip one of these up for you if you're lucky. Chicken, cheese, and veggies, pancaked between 2 wraps and popped in the oven. Subway, the pizza sub. Apparently, this one's like Sasquatch. There are scattered sightings everywhere, and some grainy videos that may have been tampered with. While we're at it, another favorite from Subway is simply the old cut, where they dig a trench in your bread instead of just slicing it, leading to better cold cut and veggie distribution. Also known for causing the wing effect, where your bologna hangs out the sides of your sandwich for some tasty pre-nibbles. In-N-Out Burger, animal-style hamburger. The well-known secret menu at In-N-Out features this heavenly gem, their regular burger patty cooked in mustard, then topped with extra pickles, extra spread, and grilled onions. For bonus points, try animal-style fries, too. Most fish and chip places, batter bits, a.k.a. scraps. I knew a girl who was all over these. She'd lean over the counter with a guilty whisper, and the cashier would nod slowly and hand over a wet, greasy paper bag full of batter drippings that fell in the oil by accident. Yeah, this is the bottom of the barrel of off-the-menu stylings. I didn't say it was pretty out there. McDonald's, the flavor saver. This one isn't that common, but it's where the very nice employee pumps a shot of hot caramel or fudge in the bottom of your ice cream cone. Last tasters go nuts for this, as you can imagine. McDonald's, fries with Big Mac sauce. Lots of people put fries right on the burger, which I agree tastes delicious. But this technique allows you to switch things up a bit and put some of your burger's best feature right on your fries. Ignore protests from your arteries and ask for a little cup of Mac sauce on the side for dipping. McDonald's, Big Mac with McChicken or Quarter Pounder patties. The bun-heavy Big Mac surgically altered into a meat-heavy half-pounder or Big McChicken. Now, you're much less likely to get that dreaded all-bun first bite. Now, I'm sure there are hundreds of other off-the-menu gems that I've never heard of or know about, but that's the beauty. There are all these little surprises just waiting to be discovered. What possible fast food mouth love will you discover next? Ordering off the menu at fast food restaurants is a great deal. Maybe you're a loyal customer looking for that new taste. Maybe you have strict dietary restrictions, so it's either off the menu or no menu at all. Or maybe you're just a grumpy guy who makes personal requests with a deep scowl and a few thumping cane stomps. But whatever the case, whatever your background, whatever your taste, I think we can all agree that it sure is nice getting a little something special for lunch now and then. Awesome.
paying for something with exact change. Feel this pain. You're a cashier in a busy store at holiday season. Now say you're good at your job and you've been there a while. You've long memorized the produce codes and you bag like a champion. You're keeping up with the traffic, whipping customer after customer through the till in no time flat. You're rocking the credit cards, you're rocking the debit cards, and your line is the most sought-after line at the store. Yes, it seems like nothing can stop you. You are Cashatron, a top-secret beta version prototype of the world's most highly efficient cashier. And if you've been there before, if you've ever cashed and cashed hard, if you've lived the cash life and have the varicose veins to prove it, then you know what I'm talking about. And you also know the one thing that can trip you up. Yes, you know the stick in the bike spokes for a veteran cashier is simply running out of change. It happens all of a sudden, too. One moment you're whipping through the line, and then suddenly you stare up at a customer and apologize profusely as you awkwardly dump two handfuls of sweaty coins in their hands. You look back at the long line and just hope somebody else opens up a new lane while you wait for change to arrive. It's a terrible feeling, and it makes us old cashing veterans shudder just thinking about it. And that's why it's so great for cashiers when someone pays with exact change. As an added bonus, customers get to empty their pockets and lighten their loads. Yes, it's a win-win situation. Plus, there's a bonus round, too. That's when you pay for something with exact change with every single coin you have in your pocket. I'm talking about when you have 8 coins in your pocket that add up to 74 cents and the bill comes to $5.74. Nope, no breaking a 10 for you because you just won the bonus round jackpot. Paying for something with exact change, folks. Awesome.
Absolute, perfect silence. Awesome.
The first shower you take after not showering for a really long time. Sure, the first couple days of not showering have a bit of a dirty, cool, hippie-ish roughing it feel to them. You come into your own, letting the deodorant wash away, your hair get full of scraggly knots, and the sweat dry into your clothes. If you're camping, you're at one with nature. If you're at home, you're at one with a lazy weekend. If you're traveling, you're at one with delayed multiple stopover international flight. Either way, you're at one in your dirty zen moment, and that's cool. But whether it's a day, 2 days, or even a week later, it eventually hits you. You need a shower. Bad. And you ain't gonna get one till you get home. Suddenly, you don't want to be a hippie no more. Then you start thinking about it, and you keep thinking about it. You start to notice dirt stains building up on your arms and legs. You smell the thin film of leftover bug spray and sunblock on your skin. You comb a dead earwig out of your hair while collecting sticks for the campfire. Your scalp gets really, really itchy. And let's be honest, your groin region isn't in the best shape either. Yeah, that's why the first shower you take after not showering for a while feels so good. You could actually feel the dirt washing off you. The white bar of soap turns a bit darker, and you use a week's worth of shampoo to work your hair into a massive lather afro. The shampoo gets in your ears, but you don't mind. There's sand in there anyway. Your sunburns and scrapes get washed out. Your tightly wrenched neck gets massaged by the warm water. Your nose gets a good blowing. And you wash all the bits of spiderweb, campfire ash, and lake algae off your face. Then you're finally back. Fresh, sparkly, and squeaky clean, you've completed your soapy metamorphosis back into the old clean you we remember. Yes, your hair is shining, your skin's soft and streak-free, and your scalp is rehydrated and ready to rock. Plus, let's be honest, That groin region is now totally awesome.
The smell of gasoline.